Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th day of May, Anno Domini 2024. May the 4th be with you. It is also... Yeah. It is also Worldwide Naked Gardening Day, so get out there and stop and smell the roses. At 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Before I say the news, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we are Soundbites.
We already went dancing naked around the Maypole a couple of days ago.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And now we have Beltane, and now, which is not how they pronounce it. It's like 16 syllables in there, and there's H's and things.
Is it odd that our neighbor put up a 10-foot privacy fence?
Yes. I would have put 12 or 14.
Yeah. Awkward. Can't unsee that.
All right. Apple's earnings report for the second quarter of the company's 2024 fiscal year showed a slide in hardware sales, especially for the iPhone. Nonetheless, Apple beat analyst estimates for the quarter thanks to the company's rapidly growing services revenue. iPhone revenue dropped about $6 billion, a fall of about 10%. This was the second consecutive quarter with declining iPhone revenues. That said, investors feared a sharper drop before the earnings call. Notably, Apple's revenue in the region it dubs Greater China, which includes China, Taiwan, Singapore, and Hong Kong, fell 8% overall. The company fared a little better in other regions. China's economy is slowing even as China-based Huawei is taking a bigger slice of the pie in the region. Globally, Mac revenue rose about $350 million. Other products, which include the Watch, the iWatch, Apple Watch, AirPods, Apple TV 4K, HomePod, and the new Vision Pro headset, were down close to $1 billion, despite the fact that the quarter included the launch of the Vision Pro. iPad revenue is also down by about $1 billion. Apple is expected to launch new iPads next week, which suggests that these updates are needed to achieve the company's business goals. The rosiest revenue category was services, which includes everything from Apple Music to iCloud. Its revenue was up about $3 billion. The company also announced authorization of $110 billion for share buybacks. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, and that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, did you buy a new iPhone or iPad this quarter? Your choices are, I did, I didn't, and I what now? So far, we've got 25 votes. I what now is just ahead of I didn't, and I did has 0 votes. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
Now's the worst time to buy an iPad because there's new ones coming next week.
Right, exactly.
Most likely, 99%.
Right.
So
we've heard a lot of rumors, but we don't do rumors here.
Yeah. Well, and people have broken down the announcement icon has an iPad pencil in it. Oh, new iPad. And they didn't introduce any new iPads last year, so they're all due.
Right.
So
and they're saying they'll have an M something chip in them, whatever M number.
Yeah, the high end 3, yeah. You know, maybe. But yeah, so don't buy an iPad this week. Wait till next week. The current models will go on sale, and the new models will come out at, generally, usually they come out at the price the current ones are.
Right. This is all speculation, of course. Yeah. We know nothing. But yeah, so
in fact, we know nothing. At my Apple authorized sales and service provider, they don't tell us a darn thing.
No, that's right. They're, you get to enjoy the mystery, yeah, and the surprise as much as anyone.
Yep.
Also, this is just one more thing that tells me Apple really isn't a computer company anymore.
Yeah,
it's a service company. The vast amount of money that Apple makes comes from their services, like iCloud and Apple Music. And so they really are a service company. And that's just a thing to remember. They make hardware. They make software. But what they really do is provide services. And that's where they're making all their money. So You know, there's got to be some sort of pressure somewhere in the company to say less in the hardware and software and more in the services, although it's the hardware and software that supports the services. So,
yeah, it's a cycle.
Right. Double-edged sword.
Yep.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good morning, guys. A couple of things. One's PC, one's Apple, Mac. On the Mac, I have a MacBook Air, and I'm using LibreOffice, and it will not save documents when I ask it to. And when I say save as a PDF or export to PDF, it won't seem to do that either.
What happens when you try? Is there an error message of some sort?
Nope. Just nothing.
What program is this?
LibreOffice.
Oh, LibreOffice.
LibreOffice.
Is the save button dim that you can't click it? Or you click save and it doesn't save it?
I'm getting the wheel, turning wheel of multiple colors.
Okay, so something is happening.
How full is your hard drive?
How slow?
How full?
Full. I don't know. It hasn't given me any indication that it's full.
No, you'd have to go in and actually check.
Tell you until it gets to zero.
Right. If you go on, you know, your desktop, and there's an icon that says, you know, my PC or my computer.
In his case, it'd
be Macintosh HD.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can just go in and check the properties of that hard drive, and that should report how much is used and how much is free.
Yeah. Get info in the file menu. What you may need to do is part of the new security procedures built into the Mac is that you have to grant an application permission to access folders. I'm looking to find a post for it. So you have to go into your system settings and go into folder permissions and give Libre access to the documents folder, to the desktop folder, the folders you want to be able to access your files in. Since it's a non-Apple program, you have to grant explicit permission for that program to access folders.
Okay. It wasn't a problem before, so...
Before what? What changed?
Yeah, I don't know. It may have been an update or something, but it didn't.
Yeah, it may have been an update that turned on some higher security level.
Right. An update that imparted security that you didn't have before.
Yeah. And you may also want to check LibreOffice for updates, too.
Okay. Okay. I'll do all that. Now, on my PC, I find that when I turn it on, I have to run CCleaner in order to turn off Chrome and Microsoft Explorers, whatever that's called now. They seem to come on automatically, which I don't want. And I'm wondering if there's a way to close those or to not have them come on.
Go into the settings of each app and tell it not to start at login.
Okay.
Or remove it from the startup group.
Yeah. Right.
Is a longer way around it, but there should be a setting in the app itself.
Which version of Windows is this?
10.
Usually what happens is if you go along the toolbar, along to the right side, there's usually an up arrow. If you click on that, it'll show you the applications that are running on your system. If you right-click on one of them, you can open it up and change the settings. You know, tell it not to start at startup or, you know, just shut it down.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ed. That's an interesting thing that Apple is now doing. So they pre-approve their apps, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But if you want to use a non-Apple product, you have to explicitly go in and say, this one's okay.
Yeah.
For these folders, every folder you want it to use.
Right.
So if I save everything under my documents, it'll do all of those subfolders.
Right.
But if I want to save some things in my document, some things in temp, something somewhere else, I got to go into each one.
Yep.
Nice.
And the whole thing is to stop bad programs from accessing folders they're not supposed to be able to access.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. The annoyance comes in with people that, so I'm the only one using my computer. Why do I have to have user accounts and why do I have to have permissions? because you want to make sure you're the only one using your computer.
That's exactly right.
Someone from the internet didn't sneak in and load something in the background without you knowing it. People, so we already had to stop auto-installing things. It used to be, what you know, you wanted to get a new program, you'd download it, and it would install automatically. Well, then the bad guys started doing malicious downloads and malicious installs. So we had to stop auto-install, and then you have to double-click it anyway. And then after you launch the installer, it says, are you sure you want to install this program? You know, Chrome downloaded it, you know, today. And so, yeah, I'm sure.
Right.
So it's because there's so many bad guys doing so much bad stuff. It's
right.
It makes the rest of us have lots of problems.
Yes. Yes. And that's not a bad thing. Once you understand the why and you understand how to fix it for yourself, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Would you rather have me?
No. It looked like CTR.
Oh, GR.
I now see that you've created a G with two separate parts to it. So I didn't understand that at first.
That's the way I've always made my G's.
Okay. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from New York.
How long have I been printing these?
Clearly not long enough for me to understand what you're doing.
I love it.
Mark, how are you? What's up?
Good. How are you?
Peachy.
Had to buy a new computer last week. My custom made just decided to die, and it was going to be too much to fix it. So I bought a new one, and I was setting it up, and of course it's wonderful Windows 11, and I noticed that I wanted to put Foxit Reader on there for my PDFs, and son of a gun, if it would not take it for my go-to program. And every time I did, it said something else was holding on to it, and look, and it's Edge. And every time I go to change it, it wouldn't change. I had to go into safe mode to change it.
Yeah, Edge wants to open your PDFs for you to be handy, because you're probably downloading it from the internet. But you should have the option to do the open with.
Make it the default.
And it would not be my default program until I went into safe mode and changed it. Then it took it.
Gotta love some of those features of Windows.
Now, yeah.
Now, what does someone do that doesn't want to know how to go into safe mode?
Too bad.
They wouldn't
change it.
They wouldn't use Foxit. They would just click a PDF and be glad that it opened.
Right.
Yeah, because I think within the settings, because you know how they say what's your default browser and what's your email program, and they have different things for like Word and Excel, what to use. And it'll say like PDFs. And you go over to the right, and there's usually a down arrow, and you can suggest.
Exactly what I did.
Yeah.
And everything that Edge locked into when I set up the computer, you know, initially, it would not change unless I went into safe mode and changed it.
See, now, that's where I'd get rid of Edge.
Well, could you not change it in default apps?
Exactly.
And wow.
Edge took a hold of, would not let go of.
That's why I like Revo, and Revo will remove Edge.
That's true.
Yep.
Wow. Thank you. That's good to know.
It was very frustrating.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean,
we
joke about the fact that it's not your computer, it's Microsoft's computer. But, you know, we keep seeing the proof of that.
Mm-hmm. I had to go into safe mode so much because I was figuring this out on the fly that I actually made a desktop shortcut to go into safe mode.
Good one.
So,
good one, my friend.
You're ready for the next time something goes wrong.
Exactly. Well, thank you for letting me vent.
No problem.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. You're ready for
the next time something goes
wrong. Wow. That's Microsoft for you.
Okay. I understand that. These are, in Apple's case, they're security features.
Mm-hmm.
In Microsoft's case, they're control features. one of the reasons I like Linux because it doesn't do any of that. Now, the downside of that is I better do some of that stuff. Otherwise,
maintenance. Yeah,
there's a lot of real issues. But you know, you get to be as comfortable and as safe as you want, depending on what operating system you pick.
Well, I just had an issue. The system did an update on my wife's machine, and you know, she goes to the when she opened up NPass, it says. And she calls me over. She goes, "Oh, it says I got an update." I said, "Okay, we'll install it." She goes to do it. It says, "Can't do it." I had to, since this last Microsoft update, I had to go in and turn off Super Anti-Spyware. The minute I did,
wow,
it let me download and install two updates to NPass that it's been trying to do, evidently, for my wife.
Wow.
After we rebooted, and you know, she can still get into her NPass. She's really loving that she can. It still blows her mind. She goes, "Wait a minute, that password isn't that long." I tell her to show it because, you know, it says excellent.
Right.
She goes, "But it's so short." I go, "Yeah, but look at the detail." Oh.
Yeah, because you
nobody's
only see,
gonna guess that one,
right? You only see like half a dozen dots for where the password is supposed to be, but once you open it up, you see it's a 100-character password. So, yeah, I get that. I do. I have let you know when I first ran, I put all my passwords into NPass, and then you get a report. You know, you've got 700 passwords and 500 of them are compromised and 200 of them are identical and, you know, whatever the numbers are. Mine were a lot lower than that, but you get the idea. So I went into all the identicals and said, make a password and make it 100 characters. And then, you know, I did this over a couple of weeks because I did a few at a time and great. And now most of my stuff is pretty dang secure.
Yep.
I got a couple that are weak, and those are things that are just run on my machine, and they're not important. They don't really connect to anything major, so I don't care. I haven't bothered with them yet. You can get yourself as secure as you're willing to be with something like NPass. So that's one of the reasons we recommend it.
You want me to write that out?
Get away. Go away. Go sit in your chair and be quiet. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. Dave's feeling a little peppy this morning. Maybe salty would be the word.
I'll have to tell you the story after offline.
Ooh, off the air. Very exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. About that one previous caller with Edge, if he went in, because I ran into this, if he goes into msconfig, he's going to find two or three instances of Edge running in the background. I think if he went and turned those off and rebooted, I think that might solve his problem for getting the defaults.
Yeah. One of the things that Microsoft is doing is when you boot up, it loads a lot of stuff in the background.
Sure does.
If you're running Microsoft Office, it loads all of that in the background. If you're running Edge, it loads all of that in the background. And that's one of the reasons that Microsoft is so slow to load. Because all of that's happening in the background. And the reason they're doing that is so it's peppier when you actually run it. When you start Word, it pops right up. Well, sure, it's already running in the background. So that's why we recommend that people get 8 meg in a machine. Because
and 16 is better.
And 16 is better because you're going to be running a lot. Whether you like it or not, whether you did it or not, you're going to be running a lot of stuff in the background. And the more RAM you have, the better off you're going to be. But, yeah, Edge runs in the background at startup. Office runs in the background at startup. And by Office, I mean all of it, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all of it.
Just in case you're going to open it.
Yep.
Because why would you install it if you weren't going to use it all the time?
Right.
Exactly. They do the thinking for us.
Yeah.
They know better.
Yeah, like I said, it's their machine. You're just using it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thanks, Joe.
Yep. You're very welcome. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, we, man, We see that quite regularly. And some of it is in the default, is in the startup group. You can take a look at that and remove things if you like. But
they're changing things slowly, you know, little bit by little bit, taking your control of the machine over to their control.
Right.
They'll tell you what they want on the screen and how this is going to operate and how this is going to load and do this and do that.
Right.
And you constantly have to go in and turn. Well, just like last week, you were saying that other feature with the ads. Don't make the default turn it off. No, you got to go down into menus and manually turn it off.
Right. And it's like Steve said, the whole idea is that they're making it what they want. They're making their own system. And most people, as Steve said, most people don't care. They're not gonna know. You click on a PDF and it opens an Edge. I don't care, it opened. That's the important part.
Yep.
But you know, people who don't want to use Edge or want more control over their PDFs and more security over their PDFs, because I wouldn't trust Edge's security on anything.
As far as I could throw it.
And certainly you can do things in a PDF that would give an unscrupulous user control over your machine. So you want to open PDFs in something that's not going to allow that control. Foxit Reader is much better than Edge at doing that. But you don't get to make that choice unless... like Mark, you know enough to go in and make those changes manually and to do it in safe mode and et cetera, et cetera. It's a real battle. Microsoft is trying to, and I get it, make your machine a little safer, and B, make it theirs. And mainly that's because they trust their products more than they trust a third-party product. And I get that. But that means it's no longer your decision.
Right. And I don't trust them as far as their safety because, you know, they don't keep up to with it. Like if you're getting, say, super anti-spyware or malware bytes, and you're paying for those, they're going to be constantly updating, whereas Microsoft is like, yeah, when we get around to it.
Right. Well, how many times do we see... Microsoft just patched something that's been around for a month.
Or longer. Because
they only patch once a month. So somebody discloses it the day after Patch Tuesday. It doesn't get fixed until next Patch Tuesday. That's a month that the bad guys get to go in and play around. Whereas, you know, with every piece of software I own, the day I read about a problem with one of those pieces of software, at the very most, it's one day until it's fixed. And usually it's hours.
And the guy that finds the problem usually fixes the problem.
Usually fixes the problem. And you know, one of the things that we've heard about regularly is pwn to own, where you get money for fixing problems. People seem, one of the bad things about that is people tend to hide problems and their fixes until pwn to own so that they can make money off of them. But that means pwn to own only happens a couple of times a year. So now you've got a situation where at least one person knows about a flaw. And if one person knows about it, there's 100 people that know about it. And it's not getting fixed until they get paid for it.
That's why there's more and more companies doing their own bug bounty programs. And there are umbrella companies. So if your company's too small to do one yourself, you can join this umbrella program and they do it for you.
Right.
So to get your bugs fast.
Right. And that makes sense.
Fast.
All right. That music tells us we are done with this segment. But don't go away. We're only a quarter of the way through the show. We'll be back with a whole lot more Dave Enright, a whole lot more Steve Ray, a whole lot more Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we're member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we'll get a YouTube hit for playing that music.
Now, can you read that one okay?
You're lucky we're on the air. Our next caller is Mike.
No.
From Webster.
Wait a minute, folks. He's gone.
He's gone, yeah.
He's back. Remember, I got a button. Welcome. Hi, I'm Mike. What's up?
But you remember, I hold the master control here. Right. You can push buttons all you want.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're having fun.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling on behalf of my grandmother, who she also wanted to be known that she is not a coward and she is a supporting member.
God bless you, Grandma.
Yes, sir. Yes.
What's her name?
Her name is Judy.
Hey, Judy, thank you for the support.
You're welcome.
Oh, she's listening.
But I was calling in with an issue. I'm trying to help troubleshoot some problems that she's had with her Gmail account. And the issue was she's got three different Gmail accounts, and they were all loaded onto her one window in Gmail, and where she could just click it and go straight into her email and select all the different accounts, no problem. And now she was having some login issues, and I fixed that. But the issue that we're faced with now is that we're unable to get her other two accounts onto this Gmail window where they won't stay. They won't options when you go to selecting other accounts. No matter how many times I log in on them to add the account to Gmail.
Hold on one second. So I assume that you're using Chrome?
Yes.
Okay. Because Nick always accuses me of having too many. I have quite a few tabs. And what you have to do is once you open up the different tabs for Windows that you want, there, so like I've got like four different Gmail accounts that I like to click on the tabs. Once you get it set up the way you want it, you go over to another blank window and you click the little dots there and says settings. And in settings, you'll see you scroll down a little bit and it says startup. You click on the startup and what it'll do is open up another window. And down at the bottom, one of the options is use current tabs at startup. What it does is it saves in memory all the current tabs that you have along the top to reload every time you load Windows. So if you put certain things in an order, it'll load them all.
So that, that will load each email address in a separate tab.
Yep.
Do you want to see all of them in one window at the same time?
Yes. Okay. She wanted it to be where she could select from account to account in the one Gmail tab.
Yeah. Okay, so what you're actually saying is when you use Gmail, you're trying to add additional accounts.
Right. And you do that in settings in Gmail.
Right, and it's not taking them.
Yes, it's not. I've tried adding them multiple times, and I've even tried going into Google password manager and saving the passwords in Gmail, like the window as well, and it's not remembering any of that stuff.
Okay, so
are you remembering to hit the save button at the bottom of the window?
Is there one of those? Oh my god! I don't know if I clicked that. It saved, actually, if I still go into the password manager, they are still there. So I didn't see a save button, but they are saved there in the password manager for Google, but there's still not an option on Gmail.
So what you want to be able to do is to click on her picture in the upper right and select a different account.
Yes.
Okay. So what you want to do is first check your browser settings. Make sure cookies are turned on. Make sure JavaScript is enabled. And make sure private browsing is off.
And that's also in the little three dots in the setting.
That's in your browser settings. That's in the Chrome settings.
Okay, and you said cookies are accepted, Java is on, and private browsing is off?
Yeah, cookies are on.
Cookies are on.
JavaScript options are enabled.
JavaScript options enabled.
And private browsing is off. If that doesn't work, clear the browser cache.
The browser cache, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, I've been there before, too. That didn't help.
Okay, good. That's good to know that you did that.
When you go in to clear the cache, make sure you set the for all time or all cache, because you have the option of doing just today or just yesterday. Make sure you do all cache just to be safe.
Okay, we noted that. Thank you.
And the last thing to try is make sure you're using the latest version of the Chrome.
Okay. All right, so we'll make sure we double check that, too.
Yeah. Those are the three things to check first.
And I'm also posting a link from Google on how to sign in to multiple accounts at the same time.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So we look at
it. Is that online?
Yeah.
Okay. So we find there, like, is it on, like, a social media or, like, a Facebook or something you guys posted?
If you go to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, you'll see, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the list of latest links heard on the show.
Okay,
at this moment, it's the top one, but that'll slide down as the show goes on.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, mining Monero.
Refresh the page, and you should see the latest one.
See a couple more.
Oh, I see it. Sign into Google, multiple accounts at once. Oh my God, you guys are amazing. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Right. Well, we still have time. If all this doesn't work, I'm calling you back in the next hour.
That's the right thing to do. We've got a couple of more things you could try.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. Yep.
Thanks. Oh, and we should remind them to to reboot the computer after doing all of those things.
Yeah.
Each of those things. So, you know, clear the cache and reboot and blah, blah, blah. So just to be on the safe side.
We had a couple of customers this week call and ask about, you know how when you log into your bank, it sends you that one-time code to verify it's you?
Yep.
But then it's supposed to remember you from then on.
Well, it may or may not, depending on the bank and a bunch of other things.
Right. Something changed this week, and several banks are now... Or something changed in Chrome settings, because I know they're trying to get rid of cookies.
Right.
So now every time they log in, they have to do the code, they have to wait for the phone call to come in, they have to type, and it's just a horrible pain. And how do we stop that? I'm afraid you don't.
Buy the bank and make the change.
Yeah, it never used to do that. Somebody changed something.
Right. What they're trying to do is keep you safer.
Right. Keep a bad guy from getting into your account.
And... I've said this many times before. The little bit of pain that causes you every time you log in, and I log into my bank twice a day.
Yeah.
The little bit of pain that causes you is a whole lot less pain than suddenly going into your bank and finding somebody stole all your money.
Yep.
I'm completely happy with typing those few codes in there.
Yeah, but then on the other side of that, it times out in 5 minutes and auto logs you out.
Which
is all so. One or the other.
Right. And the other thing, of course, is that for most of the, and I've seen this, we have Verizon, and this week has been horrible about this. Text messages are the last thing that goes through. It's women and children first, right? And you know, text messages are playing in the band. They go down with the ship. So sometimes I've gotten text messages after the 5 minute timeout.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, that's not the bank's fault. That's Verizon today. And it depends on the volume of traffic on their system.
Yep.
Sometimes I get it immediately, and sometimes it takes forever. So, again, as far as security goes, I'd rather be secure and a little bit inconvenienced than wake up some morning to find somebody drained my bank account.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got a call from my bank yesterday from the fraud, a text. So I called them right away because, you know, I don't even trust the text messages. You know, they could be spoofing you.
Right.
Called my bank. And, yeah, evidently somebody was over at Jersey Mike's trying to run up a $78 food bill.
Nice.
And then they go.
You're a very generous man to give somebody that kind of power over you.
And they go, did you do that? I go, no, I'm home getting ready to eat
now. Was it actually in Rochester?
I didn't look at the address. I just saw Jersey Mike's.
Right.
And he goes, okay, we'll be shutting that down and sending you a new card.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I had my card compromised once, and I started buying expensive ski equipment in Utah.
I had somebody buy half a dozen fur coats in Florida.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember.
My boss, it was so funny. Someone got her account, and she's working with the police, and they say, leave it open so we can catch the person. And so they went to Tiffany's and bought expensive jewelry. They went to Saks and bought all expensive stuff. Then they went to Dell and bought Dell computers.
That's the one that hurt.
That was the one that hurt. All right, cancel it right now. The other thing we've seen is that...
Remember, his boss owns an Apple dealership.
Company, yeah. The other thing we've started seeing is that because text messages are technically insecure...
Right.
The bigger companies, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and now a lot of other ones, are starting to do a different authentication process.
Right.
I was with a customer trying to get back into his Google account on his new computer. So it's a brand new computer. So there's extra flags going.
Sure.
Google doesn't know it's his new computer. It could be a bad guy.
Right.
So instead of sending a text code, it said, on your iPad, open up the Google app and click yes.
Yeah.
The iPad he left at home.
Oh, yeah.
So then I click on try another way. And SMS is dimmed because it says, you have a more secure way of doing this on your iPad.
Yeah.
But the iPad is home!
I have a Google Authenticator and Facebook Authenticator, actually, yep. on my phone. And so I often get something that says, check your phone.
Yep.
And I hit yes, and I'm in. Easy.
The problem sometimes is which phone? I set up an Android emulator once to play a game on my computer, Android phone game on my computer, and then forgot all about it. And then like 6 months later, I'm logging into Google and it says, on your Galaxy Nexus 5, click OK. I don't have a Galaxy. Oh, that's probably what it was emulating.
Yes, yeah.
6 months ago that I deleted.
Right.
And I forgot to tell Google. So that's the other side of the story. Go into your Apple account, Google account, Microsoft account. Look at the devices logged into your account. Remove the ones you don't have anymore.
Right, exactly.
And if you don't recognize a device, remove it. But if it could have been yours, okay. But if it isn't you and isn't anything you recognize at all, you may have another problem. Change your password.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys. Lately, I have been inundated in the Apple Mail app with no sender messages. Some of them don't make any sense, and then others are clearly a scam. I've done everything I know how to do, and I can't stop them. I will block them and then delete them, block and delete, and I still open up Apple Mail a couple hours later or the next morning. And scroll, look at 15, 20 of these things. I am just at my wit's end and really quite tired of this.
Part of the problem is...
It's robots.
It's robots. You can't stop people from sending you mail. But what you can do is block the sender so you don't see that sender address anymore. And you do that in the message menu, block sender. The problem is the bad guys don't use the same sender every time. So blocking the sender almost never works. Marking the message as junk almost never works because the bad guys put enough random gibberish in every single message they send out to get past the junk mail filters. And so it's a catch-22. There's almost nothing you can do about it except delete them when they come in.
Well, you can set a rule where if the from does not contain an at sign...
No sender, yeah, you could do it that way.
Yeah. At least you can try that.
Throw it to the trash.
Right.
Or move the junk so you can look at it later just in case.
Move it into spam or junk so you can look at it just to be sure it's working right. Yeah.
So in the mail
before
menu.
Before you use delete.
Yeah, in the mail menu you go to preferences and then rules, and you can make a rule, if the sender does not contain an at sign, move the message somewhere, trash or junk or something like that.
Or spam. Spam filter.
Yep.
Okay.
That's probably best. And if you find that it's working, then you can just automatically delete it.
Yeah. But in the headers, there would be a from, wouldn't there?
Well, there might be not. There's no from in the. There's no from. There's a.
To?
What do they call it?
A different header flag?
There's a different header flag for where it came from, but it's not the from field.
Not the from field, yeah, that could be. Because we ran into an issue this week. Yahoo and Google have both started requiring bulk senders to use SPF and DMARC and what's the other one?
Like DKIM.
Yeah, you have to turn on three things in your email service. So Jackie's been dealing with a lot of legal issues lately with her mother passing. And so the lawyer started to send her an email to her Yahoo account, and it bounces back to the other end.
Yep.
Because they're not using secure mail yet.
Right.
Every single mail provider needs to start adding these security flags in their email service.
This is happening to Elaine. She sends out a newsletter. So do I.
Yeah.
And I set up hers exactly the same way I set up mine. We're both using MailerLite. Mine go through to everybody just fine. Hers get bounced. I don't get it.
And so it's not individual messengers. It's large, you know, corporate, you know, MailerLite and MailChimp and Constant Contact and So we've had Google and Yahoo announced this several months ago, and we've been going through with a lot of our customers to get it turned on. But every now and then we find someone that doesn't have it on.
Yep.
And there's nothing we can do. In fact, the bounce message gives a link to go to your email service and turn on SPF and DMARC and something else.
DKIM,
yeah. DKIM, yep. To prove that you're a legitimate mail sender. So now part of me is thinking, well, the bad guys will just do that too.
Yep.
So the whole point is to cut down on spam.
Right.
So if you have authenticated and secure mail, then you're not spam. Well, the spammers will start doing that soon now.
Right.
And it won't matter.
Right.
Okay, guys. Well, I've got enough information. All I need to do is wait a couple of hours, and I'm sure another one will pop up.
The only alternative is to change your email address and tell everyone your new address, and that's a horrible pain in the
butt. And they'll get that eventually anyway.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of doing that now. It is painful, but every day I get a few more moved. And I'll see if that happens. But like I said, all I need to do is wait a couple hours and something else will pop up. I'll see what happens.
Yep. It's sad when the thing you can count on most are the spammers.
Yeah. So your email address probably just got put on some new spam list.
Yep.
You might want to check Have I Been Pwned and see if your address has been in a recent leak.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Yep.
And I don't know about Apple, but I know the Gmail is very good at scrubbing that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very good at it.
Yep.
So if you're one of those people who's having this kind of problem, you're looking to move your mail somewhere, consider Gmail. I know there are reasons people don't like Google, and I get that. But one of the things they are extremely good at is scrubbing spam. I mean, nobody's perfect, but they're extremely good. All right, let me read this news item. If you're a Windows user with Chrome installed on your PC, then this latest warning will have an impact on you. It's critical you update your browser as soon as you can. A Chrome security update was issued on Monday. This release includes a critical fix for the underlying graphics engine of the type that has allowed attackers to execute code on target machines in the past, albeit no news yet as to any exploit this time around. The update also includes two high-severity memory fixes, the kind typically seen in such updates. Google has acknowledged that such memory vulnerabilities in its core engine are the most frequently discovered and exploited. As usual, there is no further information, and I quote, until a majority of users are updated with a fix, end quote. Given that Google has designated the first fix, essentially a vulnerability to potential code manipulation, as critical, it seems highly likely that it's a credible threat, and once the fix becomes public, it's important that users update as soon as they can. The clock is ticking for any exploitation. Usually a critical fix might have been the biggest Chrome news of the week, but not this time. The other news is that thanks to the death of Chrome's dreaded tracking cookies has been delayed once again, this time until early into 2025 at least. So is your Chrome browser up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We have.
I wonder if that's what happened to my customers. They got this Chrome update, and there's a side effect of not saving banking cookies.
Right. It's possible, but you know, The reality is that when something like this comes along, particularly if it's critical, you really need to do the update.
Yeah.
You just have to. All right. Remember, this is not – nobody's targeting you specifically. They're targeting every computer they can reach. And because they're computer robots doing the checking, they're every computer on the internet.
If I can get a buck from a billion people.
It's $1 billion.
Yeah.
Exactly right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is John from Sotus, New York. What's up, John?
Hi. How are you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
Oh, wonderful. I bought a brand new Asus, if that makes a difference, i7 with 16 gig and 512 hard drive. I'm going crazy with it because of Windows 11. And what I did, give you a little more history, is I had a notebook, I still have it, that's running on Windows 10, that apparently before I got it was Windows 8, so they upgraded it to 10. When I turned this on and started to load, it loaded from iCloud and loaded all this garbage from that computer onto this one, and I don't want it. The only thing that I want to work on this is for my guitar apps from a company called Spark. And this is driving me insane because I can't even load an email on Windows 11 because it sits there and goes, it's looking, and that's all it does. And it looks and looks and looks, and half an hour later, it's still looking because I never had an email on the old past computer. So it don't even let me into this one. And it will not let me put something on there like DuckDuckGo, and every time I try it on there, Windows comes back up and says, you don't need a browser for that. We have Windows.
Right.
So
was this by any chance, a refurbished computer?
No, this is a brand new computer.
That you know.
Brand new.
It sounds like there's an MDM on it. So when companies buy lots of computers, they can put a management program on it to force you into their company software. You know, it's their computer. They can do what they want. So is it I wonder if it's possible the computer got returned or the serial number got transposed and it's on someone else's. So that's why it's preloading all this stuff you don't want?
So when you logged in – I'm sorry. When you logged into this brand new computer, did you use a Microsoft ID?
It automatically came up on there, and it automatically loaded, and it asked me for my to create a password, and then after that, create a PIN number.
It wouldn't have done anything automatically,
right?
What it came up with is it wanted to know what I wanted to name this computer, so I gave it a name. And then it asked me for a PIN number. Other than that, that's all it did.
Well, it sounds like you logged into your Microsoft account.
Yeah.
And so it brought everything in that you had in your Microsoft account.
Right.
I didn't have I didn't have anything in it. Whatever this last laptop was, it was a notebook, actually. It was, and this drives me out of my mind.
Yeah, so what it sounds like happened was the old machine you logged in with your Microsoft account that was hooked up to Microsoft Cloud. Okay, we stay on the line, John. We got to take a break, but please stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with John from Sotus, New York, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. We're going to take a slightly longer break, so I hope John is patient. But we will be back in just a few minutes. Take a bio break. I know I will. Get yourself something to drink. It's important to stay hydrated. You've got about 3 to 5 minutes to get out there and garden naked. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have John from SOTUS on the line. So, John, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I remembered something that I did log on to Microsoft.
Yep. Yeah, and so that seems to be what happened. On your old computer, you were logging into Microsoft, and it was automatically saving your configurations and your files and stuff to OneDrive, which is something that they will, that you can set it up to do, and they will do that so that you get a nice backup. We're always talking about backups. But what that also means is when you create a new machine, if you log in with the same ID, Microsoft assumes you want all the same stuff. So it reloads it onto the new computer, very much the same way as if you switch phones, all of your data and apps come back, or you buy a new Chromebook, all your old data and apps come back. It works the same way. So it sounds like that's what's happened here, and there's two things you need to do. One is to turn off the connection to iCloud or
OneDrive.
Which is very hard to do, because it keeps coming back.
Right. And the second thing is to just delete all the software that downloaded and all the files that downloaded.
The other thing you can do that might be a little less trouble is erase the computer and start over. And this time, don't sign in with a Microsoft account. I posted a link on our website on how to sign in with a local account only so that it doesn't tie the computer to Microsoft and doesn't bring all that stuff in.
Okay. I'll look on that. What's a local account? Can I just create a new Microsoft account, or is that...
Well, a local account is on that computer only. It's not tied into the Microsoft network environment.
Okay, because I want to blow this thing up and get rid of everything and start over.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. Read the thing that Steve posted first about how to set up Windows 11 without a Microsoft account. The local account is the thing you used to have when you used to be able to say, what username do you want? And you just put in John, and then you put in your own password, and that's good on your machine, and you're done.
Okay.
You know, instead of john@microsoft.com, and then the password you use for your email. And now it's connected to your OneDrive account, and it's pulling down all that stuff.
Which is handy if you want to synchronize all your data between all your devices.
Right.
But sometimes you don't.
Right.
Well, the problem in being here is this computer that I had before, this notebook, it wasn't mine. I didn't have iCloud on it that I even knew about. So all the crap that was on there is on this new computer, unbeknownst to me.
Right.
Yeah, it probably wasn't iCloud, because you have to install that yourself.
Right.
It was probably Microsoft OneDrive, which comes with Microsoft.
Right. And what happened was, when you logged into that old machine, you used your Microsoft email account and password, and that automatically connects you to OneDrive, because, God forbid, you wouldn't want to use OneDrive. Microsoft knows you want to use OneDrive.
They want to know everything, and it's driving me crazy, because I can't put anything on here, because when you get on, Microsoft Edge sits there and says, why would you want to do this?
Yep.
Right.
There's a little tiny do it anyway button somewhere, but it's hard to find.
You might have to scroll down to see it. But anyway, start out with a brand new install and log in and first read the instructions that Steve posted. And then use those when you log into your brand new machine, and you should not get all that stuff down.
Okay, that'd be great. I appreciate it, guys. I listened to you for probably over 10 years now, so.
Oh, well, that's what we like to hear.
Thank you much.
Thanks, John.
Have a good day. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, one of the early tricks was to just unplug from the network or turn off your Wi-Fi so the computer couldn't see the internet, so it couldn't log you into your Microsoft account.
Right, right. But yeah, it's they're all trying nowadays to own your machine,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, Microsoft makes the assumption that you want to do everything Microsoft and give them all your data and do everything their way. Apple assumes the same, and
well,
so
at least they ask.
Do they ask?
Do you want to copy everything, or do you want to? But saying no. Is a little hiding in the corner now. So it's copy everything is the default.
Right. So you can say no, but it isn't easy. It isn't obvious. And it's what gives you know, which gives them control of what you think of as your machine. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Sherry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Sherry?
Hello. Used to be a user of Outlook. Like as a client email program.
Yep.
And I stopped using it because it had bugs in it. So I'm trying to find one, a client email program that's similar to that because, you know, I was used to dragging and dropping or saving numerous emails to a folder on my desktop. So I was wondering if you knew of any email clients that work that could do that.
I might suggest you take a look at Thunderbird.
Okay.
It is from the Mozilla Foundation. It is free, although, of course, we always encourage people to donate. But it is free, and you can install it on your machine, add multiple accounts, and they all show up on the left-hand column. And for you folks on YouTube, the left-hand column. And you can then... switch among them easily and move things back and forth fairly easily, and it's all workable.
Right. Well, because I'm just was in the Gmail account, and you know I can't drag those to my desktop at all.
Well, you can't do it in the Gmail website, but you can do it in Thunderbird accessing your Gmail.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Because well, I read about Thunderbird, and I guess I read that it used to be. Handled by Mozilla, but I don't know, they stopped and somebody else is doing it, or is that true, or?
No, it, as far as I know, it's still part of the Thunderbird, Thunderbird is still part of the Mozilla Foundation.
Okay.
The MZLA Technologies Company, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Mozilla Foundation. So there's a parent and then there's another parent.
Right.
Okay. So... Thunderbird, I should be able to drag and drop numerous emails into a folder.
Yeah, I don't remember. Honestly, I don't remember if you can drag and drop or if you have to right click and say save to.
I did drag and drop.
But I believe drag and drop works.
And you can use the control key if you want to select a bunch of them at a time.
Right.
Oh, and I can save them or.
Right. And if you're talking about a folder. On your desktop, you can do that. Or if you're talking about a folder in your account, you can do that as well.
Okay, that's great. All right, and there's no security issues that you know about with...
As with all of them nowadays, when you first log in, it's going to bring up a window that says, is this you and do you really want to do this? You know, you'll get that from Google
when you
log in with a Google account. But once you say, yes, this is me, yes, here's my password, go.
And it can be a little scary because the message says, allow this computer to access your Google account. I don't want anyone to access my Google. No, you do want your computer to access your Google account.
Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I've been having problems. Like, well, I was in an AT&T breach, and, you know, they're sending me emails, breached.
The 5-year-old breach that they finally acknowledged was their fault?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got a message from McAfee first about it, like a month before the breach came out.
Right.
Yeah, so now I'm getting all these letters, and now I'm getting a lot of tons of junk mail, and I'm assuming it's from that breach or because of it.
Yeah. Right. Your address is out there now.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, my God, because I wasn't getting that in my Gmail. Now I'm getting tons of it.
Yep. I'm sorry. There's, yes.
It's back in the public news. So the bad guys that already did it 5 years ago, now we've got new bad guys that can do it now.
Pretty much.
They just got reminded about this five-year-old breach.
Well, why isn't Gmail, taking care of the spam or whatever that's come? Because, reporting spam constantly.
They try. They stop billions of messages a day, but millions of them still get through.
It's that same game of leapfrog we keep talking about. They stop it. The bad guys try something else. They stop that. The bad guys try something else. They stop that. So you're getting, if you're using Gmail, you're getting far fewer of those than you would be with another mail program, but it's not zero.
Yeah, I wasn't getting any. Now, oh, my God.
Yeah, somebody else has picked up that list is what's happened.
Yep.
So this is going to go on forever. It's not going to stop.
Basically, yeah. As we said to one of our previous callers, the only thing you can do is change your email address until that address gets picked up by the spammers.
Right.
And it's a horrible pain to change your address and tell everyone your new address.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right.
Sorry, Sherry, but that's just the way it is these days.
Thank you.
Yep. Good luck.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a number of email addresses that just get inundated with spam, and they get through for a day or two, and then Google shuts them down.
Yep.
And then a few more come through, and that gets shut down, and more, and that gets shut down. So there's a lot of that goes on.
One of the tricks that a lot of people use is we talked to Larry about making a rule in your email. Make a rule. Some programs call it a filter. If the person is not in your address book, move it to a folder saying read later.
Right.
So then you only see messages from people in your address book, which is much more likely to be real messages.
Right.
But some of the spammers do come from people in your address book because they harvest email addresses.
And you have to be diligent because, you get a message from your doctor.
Yeah.
Who may not be in your address book, or they're using a new address that isn't in your address.
So that's why you have to read it later and make sure
and
it was good or not.
You at least look at it every day.
Yeah.
yeah. And of course, when you're using a program like Thunderbird, it shows up in blue when there's new messages. So it's easy to go in and say, okay, I see new messages are in read later. Let me look.
I knew someone that uses a whitelist service.
Yeah.
So whenever you mail them, you get a message back saying, this person has a whitelist. Fill out this form to make sure that you're really you, and they'll approve your message. I guess I don't need to mail them that much.
Yeah, right. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, who knows?
Yeah, it's the truth.
One quickie. I just tried the drag and drop with Thunderbird, dragged a file, a message to the desktop.
Yeah.
Works like a charm.
Good.
I love Thunderbird. And it still looks kind of the same like it always has. They don't put things in weird spots just because they can.
Yeah, right.
So, Thunderbird, go for it.
Good, thanks.
Couple of questions here. Has Firefox gone off the rails again? Because lately, things don't display properly. And I didn't know whether that's a common problem or I'd just get rid of it and reinstall it or something. Because it just all kinds of weird things overlaying and big text overlaying small text and stuff like that. You get any weird stuff like that lately?
I haven't seen any, no. Mm.
Not lately, but I have seen sometimes where the page doesn't render properly and somebody changed something somewhere.
Or Windows.
Yeah. Check for a Firefox update. Whatever update installed that broke it might have an update to fix it.
Almost always.
Says up to date, but.
Yeah, almost always that's not. It depends. If it's happening on every page you go to, it's something in your machine or in Firefox.
Yeah.
If it's happening on, one
sporadic
site, then it's their problem.
Well, I'll keep poking at that one. The most annoying problem, most of the sites, I'm using VPN, and most of the sites, no problem. But lately, there's a couple sites where I got to turn the VPN off in order to actually get into the site. My pharmacy, that really annoys me.
Yep.
Are there any workarounds, or is that just one of those things that you got to live with?
Use a different endpoint for your VPN. Make, you know, make sure there's one that's in the U.S. and maybe in Western New York.
Well, I don't get that many. I get New York or New Jersey. My only choice. I'm using Express VPN.
Mm-hmm. So they're doing it as a security precaution, most likely.
Yeah. So I'm not the only one suffering from this.
No. This is, you know, one of the problems with VPNs. You know, we talk about how do you trust the VPN because they can see all your traffic. But the other problem is where you're coming from has been spoofed. So if the site you're going to has security turns on that said, for example, you can only get this in Western New York.
Yeah.
You're not going to get it.
Hmm.
You know, and if you're in, you know, your health provider may have, you know, if it's coming from outside the network, it's probably an attack. We're not going to accept it.
Hmm. Well, c'est la vie.
C'est la vie. Sorry, Dave.
For now. Catch you later.
Yep. Yeah. VPNs are not the end-all be-all.
And despite the hype of all the TV commercials, they don't really protect you on the internet.
They don't hide you, and they don't protect you.
Yeah.
I do not understand the point of a VPN. I'm sorry. I just do not.
Yeah. Well, because the ad says it's going to hide me on the internet and protect me from bad guys.
Nope. He's not going to do it. He's not going to happen. So I don't know what to say about that.
And what a VPN is really handy for is I use them all the time. When I'm on a client site, I VPN to my office, and I can access my database.
See, that's different.
That's what a VPN is supposed to do.
Right. It's a virtual private network. What that means is you go to your private network virtually.
Yep.
That's what a VPN is supposed to do.
You used to have to string ISDN lines between two offices if you wanted to see the same stuff.
Right. But when I was working, thank God I'm not anymore, but when I was working, I could VPN into RIT's network. And it was as if I were sitting in my desk in my office.
Yep.
That's what a VPN is for.
The other most common use of a VPN is to steal video content online.
Yes.
So if you tell your VPN you're in London, you can watch BBC.
Yep.
tell your VPN you're in Tokyo, you can watch anime.
Yep, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark. Is he from Greece, New York?
Yes.
Hi, Mark. What's up?
Don't write funny G's, right?
Exactly.
Anyways, I wanted to make a comment. The gentleman that was setting up the computer.
Yeah.
When you go in and it asks you for the Microsoft account, you can say, you can sign in, but you can say set up as a new computer.
Well, that's true.
So that it doesn't copy all your stuff.
Right, so it doesn't copy all your stuff.
Right, so if you prefer to be signed in and have your Microsoft account, but you don't want your old data, you can say set up as a new computer.
Right. Yeah. Good point. Thanks, Mark.
Second thing is I can't highly recommend it enough, is a program called WinArrow Tweaker. I got my old right-click menu back.
Oh, nice.
Not that one, more options.
Huh.
AERO, not...
Win arrow, one word, and then tweaker.
Nice.
Awesome program. You can even bring back your old games from Windows 7.
Neat.
So, check it out.
We will. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Win arrow tweaker. Nice. You're going to put that on the link list. Yeah. Looks like a nice product. Very nice. Okay.
I thought it let you change your arrow.
Arrow is the GUI.
Yeah, the GUI interface, yeah.
The GUI interface. All right. Last week, the Federal Communications Commission said it fined T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon $196 million for, and I quote, illegally sharing access to customers' location information without consent and without taking reasonable measures to protect that information from against unauthorized disclosure, end of quote. The fines relate to sharing of real-time location data that was revealed in 2018. Where's Nick now? I don't even have to be wearing a red striped shirt. The FCC proposed the fines in 2020 when the commission had a Republican majority and finalized them today. All three major carriers vowed to appeal the fines after they were announced today. I'm sick and tired of writing. The carriers also said they discontinued the data sharing programs that the fines relate to. Nothing to see here. Move along.
Mm-hmm.
The fines are $80.1 million for T-Mobile, $57.3 million for AT&T, and $46.9 million for Verizon. T-Mobile is also on the hook for the $12.2 million fine issued to Sprint, which was bought by T-Mobile shortly after the penalties were proposed over 4 years ago. The problem first came to light with reports of customer location data being disclosed by the largest American wireless carriers without customer consent or legal authorization to a Missouri sheriff through a location-finding service operated by Securus, a provider of communication services to correctional facilities to track the location of numerous individuals, the FCC said. So basically, that's the thing where you see on a TV show when somebody says, can you track a cell phone? Sure. Three clicks on the keyboard. Here he is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel said that the news reports in 2018 revealed that the largest wireless carriers in the country were selling our real-time location information to data aggregators, allowing this highly sensitive data to wind up in the hands of bail bond companies, bounty hunters, and other shady actors. This ugly practice violates the law, specifically Section 222 of the Communications Act, which protects the privacy of consumer data. So you still feel safe carrying around that phone? Give us a call, especially if you've got a landline. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Yeah. We see, like I just said, we see this all the time in TV shows and movies. You know, can you track a cell phone? Absolutely. Yeah. And they pinpoint them to like 6 feet.
Even cars.
Because yeah. Because they got it now.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you think to yourself, well, okay, that's the TV show. That's true. Yep, that part is actually true.
The only thing I wasn't too sure on is turning on a phone that's turned off. But
right.
Now we're reading, when you turn off a phone, it doesn't really turn itself all the way off.
That's right.
Because the Find My location tracking is on.
Right.
So you can find your lost phone, which right. means someone else can find you too.
Which is why on TV and movies, yep. you see them break a phone apart and throw the pieces in the river.
Mm-hmm. And then every now and then someone says, you didn't need to do that. Just take the SIM card out.
Right.
Now we're using eSIMs.
Right.
So there's no physical SIM anymore.
There's no physical SIMs. So, you are,
I just bought that phone.
George Orwell is laughing in his grave.
Yeah.
We voluntarily carry around a device that keeps track of us.
Yeah, but it's not the government.
Right. They're just using the data. They're not making us carry the data.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's those things are necessary to make the phone work. The phone has to know where it is if you're going to use GPS. The phone has to know where it is to connect to the nearest tower.
Phone has to know where it is so it can get a phone call for you.
So it can get a phone call for you. So they're not nefarious in putting these things in phones. These are things that are required to make the phone function.
Yeah. The more accurate TV shows, show it pinging off these three towers. So it's somewhere in this triangle.
Right. But,
most of the towers are miles apart. So that's still a huge area.
Right.
I don't know if that's as true now with 5G.
Well, and more, right. With 5G, the towers are closer together. And most phones have GPS in them.
Right.
And GPS can track you within a few feet.
Right. So, we carry these things around and people continually get surprised that we can be tracked. Well, you did it to yourself. Don't carry a phone. It's that simple. Don't even carry a turned off phone. Don't carry a phone. We're going to take a quick break while you figure out where you are and why. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We were talking about Celsius versus Fahrenheit, and somebody said to me one time, Fahrenheit is how people feel. Celsius is how water feels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And Kelvin is how the universe feels.
Kelvin is how the universe feels. Exactly right. All right, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Apple says it's working on a fix for an issue that's causing some iPhone owners' alarms to trigger silently. It's not clear how widespread the problem is. If you're going through it, though, it wouldn't be the worst idea to check a couple of your settings. One is to make sure that the ringtone and alert volume slider under settings, sound, and haptics is turned on and up. It can be easily accidentally turned down. It can turn down your alarm's volume if you have change with buttons toggled on beneath that, so you might consider turning that off. If that doesn't work, try turning off the attention aware features toggle under settings, Facebook ID and passcode. This setting does things like let you expand notifications with your screen locked, but it can also immediately turn your alarm way down if you look at your screen while it's going off. That could be an issue if you sleep with your phone facing you on a stand and you open your eyes without fully waking up, as many people do. This obviously isn't great for those of us who prefer the convenience and relative pleasantness of smartphone alarms versus the synthetic shriek of traditional clock or bad speakers and interfaces of most music alarm clocks. Broken iPhone alarms are nothing new for iOS. This has been going on since 2015, and they happen on other devices too. But it also feels like one of the most fundamental betrayals that your smartphone can carry out. How are your alarms behaving? Give us a call if you're awake. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
One of the problems I run into sometimes is I listen to music before I go to sleep. So I have a timer stop the music when the timer runs out. But then I have an alarm where I want the music to play to wake me up in the morning.
Right.
So I often use two devices for that, just right. In case.
I have my phone set to my phone has something that Apple Android calls flip to shh.
Mm-hmm.
So you turn face down and it's do not disturb. And you can also set up people who can break through do not disturb. So my wife and my daughter can call me or text me anytime and I will hear it. So I put it down when I sleep. The problem is, for some reason, every once in a while, and I don't know if it's because I flipped to shh or I've accidentally hit it some way, but the sound is off on the entire phone. For some reason, it's zero. And so
you shushed it too many times.
I shushed it too much, I guess. There's a difference between flip to shh and flip to kill, I suppose. Yeah. But so every once in a while, I it doesn't matter anymore because I'm retired. But, you know, I like to get up and have breakfast with my wife before she goes wandering off to do whatever she's doing. So I do still have an alarm set to get up in the morning. And sometimes it just doesn't go off. Yes.
I'm disappointed.
Why?
Because I thought we would be able to get a spam caller online and have some fun with them.
Because
it came up, you know, where it usually says the name, it's a number, and then, of course, the phone number underneath it. And I kept saying, hello. You know,
waiting for the computer to answer.
Yeah. And she goes, oh, sorry, call you back. And then all of a sudden it comes back and they realize.
Right.
Shoot. Well, this week I was able to play, have fun with this one guy. I think it was Wednesday, called me, said, yes, we're at Chase National Bank and we'd like to report an issue with your card here at Walmart. I go, oh, really? Yes, they've been doing it and they put some charges on. Can we have your number? I go, well, give it to me. Well, no, you need to supply the number to it. I says, yeah, I need you to give it to me. He goes, what do you mean, sir? You should have the card. I said, I don't have one. I don't have a card with you guys. Click.
Yep. Yep. I get that all the time. Also, never say yes. Because often what you'll do is the first thing they do is say, can you hear me? You say yes. Now they've recorded that and they splice it into, would you like to buy a subscription to our support service?
That's
yes.
That's why I've always gotten the habit of saying, can I help you?
Right.
I never say my name, nor, you know, because Dave Enright, how can I help you? Yep. I'm not saying that it's me and I'm not saying it's not me.
Right.
But yeah, like you say, you got to get in the habit of not giving them any questions or
any answers.
Possible answers back that they could use against you. Because, like you say, they're always recording calls. Oh, we got it on tape. He agreed to it.
Yep.
See,
I get calls, and Dorothy Parker used to answer her phone, what fresh hell is this? And I've been answering the phone that way too. What fresh hell is this? Is this Nick Francesco? Who were you calling? We're calling Nick Francesco. Good for you. Give them nothing.
Yeah.
Give them nothing. Every once in a while, it backfires on me. I am giving a talk this Thursday, Friday. I forget which day it is. The 7th. Whatever the 7th is. Wednesday. Whatever day it is. And somebody tried to make contact with me, and I didn't know their number.
Yep.
Yeah. And I gave them the runaround. And finally, the person whose number I did know called me and said, what happened? I said, okay, here's the story. And I'm sorry, I'll be happy to talk to that person now that I know this is a legitimate number.
Because there's too many folks that are spammers that you can't trust. I'm sorry, you can't trust it nowadays. Right. You know,
we had a customer fighting a one of those, you signed up for the service contract, and they sent over a contract, PDF of a contract with his signature on it in brush script.
Yeah, well, nice.
Nice script font. Obviously. And so his credit card, so he disputed it with the credit card. The bad guy sent this contract to the credit card company and the credit card let the charge go through. Call them back again.
Time for a different credit card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but.
Well, and this was probably like 10 years ago. It was still new and fresh.
I mean, I'm with CNB and they've been fantastic. You know, like I say, they just called me last night.
Yeah.
Ask me if I had a $78 charge at Jersey Mike's. No? Okay, we're shutting down your card. Thank you.
It used to be the smaller banks were a little safer from that.
Right.
But now the smaller banks are getting spammed too.
Well, they don't want to get nailed, you know, for the charges because...
Yeah.
Yep. And it's... Yeah, it used to... Well, yeah, but I think what Steve is saying is you rarely got a call from somebody who said they were from CNB.
Yeah.
You'd get a call from... I'm from Chase. I'm from, you know, M&T. I'm from one of those
Citibank, the big ones.
Right,
SunTrust. If you're not from the South, you might not know SunTrust is the old people's bank.
Right. Right. So be very careful. And this is why we say, and I'll keep harping on it, today, while you know what you're doing, get your bank's real number, even if you have to call them or go to them. Get your bank's real phone numbers and save them in your phone as that bank.
Right. Yep.
You can look on the back of your credit cards.
Right.
Because they'll have a number. But if your card gets physically stolen or lost, you don't have that number anymore.
Right. So write it down.
Yeah. Put it somewhere else.
Yep. Exactly right. Do all that now. The same thing, you know, with all of your credit cards, all of your bank information, all of the places where you have money. Write down the real numbers because I've had that too. I got a call about a loan payment, and I did have a loan with my bank. So I hung up.
And called.
I called the real bank, and they said yes. It was our error. They were calling to tell me I had paid too much. I made a double payment. I mean, and did you want...
That's a nice problem.
And they said, do you want... us to refund that, or do you want to put it ahead? What do you want to do with it? I put it ahead. Of course I did. But the point is, I didn't know who called me. I wasn't going to give them information over the phone.
Right. Well, like mine, it comes in as, you know, this text message as CMB.
Right.
And I know the number because you know, if I don't see your number, a name in my contact list that's there, sorry, it goes to screen call.
Right. Yep. And that's a thing that you know, you've got a lot of power. You have a contact list. Put in it all the contacts you want to hear from. If you get a phone call or a text message from an unknown person, don't feel you have to answer it.
Hit the screen button. Let them leave a message that you can then call them back.
Or what's nice now, I think Android does too, Apple has live voicemail transcribing.
Yes.
So like the early days when you could listen to your answering machine, you can see who's calling and then choose to answer it before they hang up.
We've had that for a very long time. Yep. And first you can screen the call.
Yep.
Just say, you know, you go ahead and screen it, and you get a thing that says, hi, Google is screening this call. Please give your name and information. And it then you get a transcript of everything they said and why and what. Now, it depends on how well they speak in terms of mumbling and slurring and how well they speak English in terms of an accent, but you do get a transcript. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, I've been listening to how wonderful Microsoft Windows is, and I can't wait to go out and buy one.
Yeah.
As I move away from Windows permanently at some point, I'm playing with Linux, and I'm wondering, and I'm also purchasing a 3D printer from a coworker.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to get a bigger build platform.
Sure.
So I'm looking for some kind of software that will allow me to create objects. I know you do a lot of 3D printing. I've heard.
Yep. Most.
For your wife.
Yeah. Most.
So I'm wondering if you got a Linux version of. A Linux version
most CAD programs will save an STL or OBJ file.
Yeah, there's two halves of 3D printing. The 3D CAD program where you design the thing, and Cura is a good one. Is that what you use?
No. Cura is the slicer.
Then there's a slicer that takes that 3D model and slices it into little pieces that the printer can print.
So yeah, for slicing, I would use Cura, C-U-R-A. It's from a company called Ultimaker, and they have a Linux app image, which means you just download one file and double-click on it. And you have to mark it as executable, and then you can double-click on it, and it opens right up. And what that does is take an STL or OBJ file and slice it for you to send to the printer. In order to create that OBJ or STL file, you can use almost any CAD program. There's an online simple one called Tinkercad, TINKERCAD.com, and it's free, and I think it's from Autodesk, and you can make models. I do most of my stuff in Tinkercad because it's so easy. But if you're into really, really doing it, you can use everything from Blender on down to create stuff. And so there's even one whose name I can't remember off the top of my head that lets you just write a program that does it all. So at any rate, the point is that, yes, you can create, a model in almost any CAD program and save it as an STL or OBJ file and then send it to your slicer, which can then send it to your printer.
So the CAD, is there any preferred CAD program that works with Linux?
Several. Like I said, Tinkercad is an online program. In terms of other things, there's Blender. Golly, there's 50 of them.
Okay.
And a lot of times the 3D printer comes with one or 10.
Right. Well, they are generally... Windows only programs, but any CAD program will work. And there's the heck's it called? OpenCAD, OpenSCAD, is one that you can use. Blender is another, and those are the ones that will probably be your best place to start. I would personally, I would start with Tinkercad, which is an online program. You access it through any browser. Excuse me, and then you know, once you're into it, CAD programs can be very, very hard to use. So, you know, Blender is going to give you, and it's insanely powerful and gives you a massive number of features,
which can be overwhelming to a beginner.
Right.
So that's why it's, okay, it's nice to start with Tinkercad.
Right.
And one of the things that I ran into when I started playing with 3D printers is that it'll often come with example files you can print, and you can see how it works. You know, don't start by trying to print the thing you really want.
Okay.
do some example prints first, and just to learn how the printer works. You got to get the printer to level. Although most of them these days are auto leveling, which is nice.
If you get something that auto levels, you're ahead of the game. The other thing you can do
this
is,
go ahead. This one is not auto. This one doesn't have auto leveling. It's manual, but
you'll be very familiar with your leveling program at some point. The other thing is you can search out. There's millions of models. There's a site called Yegi, YEGGI.com, that is essentially a search engine for 3D prints. The chances are that dang near anything you want to print, somebody's already made a model for. So you can download their STL file, slice it with your slicer. See, the STL file gives you what the thing is going to look like in 3D. The slicer creates the program for your specific 3D printer. So, for example, let's say I've got an Ender 3. And you've got an Elegoo. We can each download the same file. I use my slicer to slice it in a way that my Ender 3 will understand, which your Elegoo printer would not. You slice it in a way that your Elegoo printer would understand, which my Ender 3 would not.
And that's sort of how 3D printers work, is that they lay down a slice of filament.
Right, a layer.
A layer, you know, millimeter, and then they raise the head up a millimeter, lay down the next slice, the next slice.
It's like a meat cutter.
Yeah.
You know, slice meat at a deli.
A reverse meat cutter.
It shaves it and it keeps stacking it up.
And you put it back together again when you're done, yeah. Well, that's the most common and inexpensive type of slicer. There's also X-ray stereo lithography. I got to play with one of those once, where you start with basically a block of material. And it uses a UV light to harden the material that's there and then lower it down a little bit. So it hardens the next layer and then the next layer and the next layer. Those are expensive, though. But you usually get a lot smoother prints out of it. But they definitely have five digits in their price.
Right. But, you'll want to start. Go to Yegi and take a look at what's available. One of the things as a gag gift, one year I downloaded and printed a little thing that clips into the louvers on your air conditioner in your car, and holds a McDonald's sauce cup, so you can eat things while you're doing it. I jokingly printed one for my wife and my daughter. Three of her friends within a week said, "I want one." So I was printing a bunch of those. I'm still printing them for people. And I found that online, and I was looking for something else. Of course, I went down a rabbit hole. I found that, and I thought, okay, that's going to be funny. That's a fun gag gift to put in the stocking. It's useful. So you can find all kinds of things, and there's stuff you can print for fun and stuff you can print that's useful and stuff you can print that I don't know why you would. But you can.
this particular one I'm looking at buying from a coworker is called FlashForge.
Oh yeah, FlashForge makes some good stuff. I don't know the models well enough to talk about them, but I know they make good stuff.
It's an older model. It's a Creator 2, I think it is. I've looked them up, and they're in the 3s and other models and in advance of that. But, you know, he's giving it to me for a real good price, and he's going to deliver it to me. So,
can't beat that.
So that happens a lot. People start with a cheap, inexpensive printer to figure out how printing works, and then you buy a better one and sell off your older one.
Yeah, that's
what he's doing. He needs a bigger build.
The one I'm looking at. It's got a dual extruder. Means you can use two different colors simultaneously. Very sexy.
I use Fusion 360 for work.
Oh,
there you go.
That'll work just fine then.
And I know it will, but it's only on Windows. And like I said, I'm moving away from that, so I'm looking to see what I can put on a Linux machine that will do similar.
It might run in Wine.
Not exactly.
It might run in Wine, but I don't honestly know if there's a...
Fusion doesn't make a Linux.
No. Right, but there's an environment called Wine for Linux. Wine is not an emulator. That lets you run Windows programs in Linux.
That's Wine.
Yep. At winehq.com. I'll post that link too. So I just did a search on Fusion 360 and test results. Test results are old, but it works. Mm. Oh, a recent update of Fusion 360 no longer works on Wine.
Mm.
Well, but you can get an old version to work on Wine.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're often better with a native app rather than trying to run something in emulation.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I was looking at the Linux specific programs. I know they got just Linux has just about, when I look at stuff for Linux, it just overwhelmingly boggles my mind so much.
There's a program called LibreCAD, which I have not played with. There's one called BRLCAD. There's Caddy.
Is LibreCAD from the LibreOffice people, or do they just use the same name?
I do not know. That's a good question. I don't know, but it is a free and open source product. There's CAD Builder. CAD. No, that doesn't have a Linux. CADMUS. So there's a bunch of them. Kadabra.
Yeah, Abra,
right, and Archimedes CAD, and so there's a bunch of them available. If you go to alternative2.net and search for CAD, you'll see them.
Okay.
LibreCAD does 2D, so it's probably not the thing you want, but there are a bunch of them that do 3D. Oh, it's a 3D modeler. No, it's a 3D modeler. So, yeah, I would, take a look and see what you like. And the good thing is, if you're using free programs, you can try them all.
Yep.
Right, yeah. Well, I was figuring that you had already done that homework, and since you're making all these things for your wife, you might have a preferred...
Yeah. Well, like I said, I use Tinkercad and Blender. I'm at either end of the spectrum. The very high end stuff is Blender is super powerful, and the very low end is Tinkercad.
Okay, great.
All right.
Good options.
Have fun.
Sounds like we're done for the weekend.
Yep. You too. Have fun. All right. That music tells us we are done. For another week, I want to thank everyone who called in. Excellent questions this week. I shouldn't sound surprised. We usually have excellent questions. I want to thank Dave Enright. I probably should thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. It's 58 minutes after the hour. Be good to one another and get out there and garden naked, and may the 4th be with you. We'll see you in just 166 hours.